You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 190 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, is deep into the night here on Monday into Tuesday morning Eastern Time. And joining me on this less enjoyable episode of the podcast, Scott Coleman is here. Hey, man.
This is how much we love you guys, because we wouldn't do this podcast if it was just us rambling in. Maybe we would, but us rambling into microphones for an hour every week. But poor Brad has been going for about 18 hours straight, and today's game was, we were hoping this would be a celebration pod and not a what the hell just happened pod, but alas, here we are, and we'll do our best.
Yeah, I've reached a delirious point, so I cannot be held accountable for mistakes that I make over the next hour or so, because, yeah, I had to work, and then Braves, and then a Hawks game. People got really mad at me that I was tweeting about the Hawks tonight. I was like, guys, I'm at the game. I have to cover the game. It's part of my job. So I didn't really enjoy that either, but hey, here we are, and obviously people know this, but a 5-4 victory for the Cardinals, 5-4 loss for the Braves, and we're going to Game 5 on Wednesday. Worth noting that the Nationals pulled off the upset, or at least the minor upset tonight, behind Max Scherzer, because their number one starter on 3 days rest pitched really well tonight. Does that sound familiar to you?
No, it doesn't.
No, it does not. but we'll leave that. We'll come back to that. But yeah, so that game was also going to be happening on Wednesday night. So now the Braves play at 5:02 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday.
Wonderful.
Bad for Scott. Probably good for me, even though the Hawks also play again on Wednesday. Alas, that's the least of our worries at this point in time. So let's just talk about what happened here. I don't know. I have no order here. First things first, we discussed, you, Eric, and I on the last podcast, what we thought about the starting pitching matchup in this game and the decision. We didn't know at the time that it was going to be Keuchel. We all sort of lean in that direction. It was Keuchel. Keuchel did not pitch well, and that isn't a terrible surprise to me. It's worth pointing out that Keuchel didn't lose them this game, because the Braves were winning after Keuchel left, so it wasn't as if he put them in a position where they couldn't win. But top line thoughts, there's plenty to get to on this podcast, but what'd you see from him? And I mean, it's kind of hard to ask if you would do it over again, because I like to whenever possible be process oriented. And, I argue that they should start Keuchel, so I can't go back and say that I would be doing it differently now. But do you feel any differently based on what we talked about 2 nights ago versus now? Because, I think I think it would be allowed based on how he looked, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all, you, Eric, and I were all kind of in agreement that at least we would have gone with Keuchel, but knowing that it was very possible that he would not be sharp. He, the results weren't terrible in game one, but he was kind of working his way out of traffic jams all game. Of course, today's start was about as bad as you can get, with a couple of gopher balls to Ozuna and Goldschmidt that were absolutely crushed. So yeah, it wasn't great. I was surprised I don't even know if surprised is the right word, because you just knew that Snit was going to leave him in one batter too long, and ultimately he did and came back to sting him a bit. But it was kind of what was to be expected. I don't want to sit here and act like we were all yelling and hollering for Julio to start or for Tomlin to start. That was kind of the choice that seemed the most likely going last night after the big comeback win. And, as you said, you can't really do it over. That wasn't like there was an obvious other choice that they should have gone with. especially the way they've had to use Max Fried out of the bullpen because of the injury to Chris Martin. So, you know, I mean, I guess to your point, I guess Keuchel didn't absolutely kill them and give up like 8 runs in an inning or something like that. But he wasn't great. I was hoping he'd be a little better. And it did put the Braves in a bit of a hole early on.
Yeah, the one thing, and I think we didn't talk about this enough, honestly, that's on me the other night, is that the argument that I think is the most persuasive against going back to Keuchel was actually one that we couldn't make 2 nights ago, and it would have been not using Max Fried that way, and maybe keeping him ready to go for today. Because, you know, Tehran, I understand he was put in a position that was not exactly easy to succeed in this afternoon. He didn't pitch well there. It seems to me, and again, this is not like something that Snicker's going to say publicly, it appears to me that the Braves have very little trust in Julio Tehran, based on the way that they used him or didn't use him in this series to this point. They basically waited till they absolutely had to use him and then used him then. I don't think they really have much trust in Julio based on that.
No, so zero.
I think Keuchel was going to be the option all the way based on the fact that they did not want to use Tehran in this game. So
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. What do you think about that?
No, and I mean, not to go too far down the game, you know, we'll go inning by inning eventually later innings. You know, Julio was obviously the losing pitcher, and as soon as, I mean, you don't have to have watched the Braves for the last 3 or 4 years, that as soon as they brought Julio in cold out of the bullpen in a role that he's not familiar with to face Colton Wong, Paul Goldschmidt, and Marcell Ozuna, basically the two guys who have done all of the damage in this series for St. Louis, you just knew it wouldn't go well. And after 2 pitches, it was already going poorly. So I don't want to turn this into the Julio Tehran bash podcast. I mean, it wasn't his fault they used him the way they did today. Obviously, we wish there would have been better results, but he was put in a bad situation. I will argue that maybe he shouldn't have been put in that situation in the first place, but alas, it's kind of water under the bridge at this point.
Yep. I know I argued, and I think you did at some point as well, that I didn't love the strategy of having Mike Soroka, the team's best pitcher, pitch once in the series, and now that's coming back a little bit. But alas. All right, let's go top to bottom here, you know, to some degree. We discussed Keuchel a second ago, but it really happened early and often here. He did get 2 quick outs in the first inning, but then it was back-to-back homers. I'm going to shout out Steven over at Be Outliers on Twitter. He referenced the fact that Keuchel gave up more runs in 4 pitches than Fulte and Soroka did in 14 innings.
That's a fun one.
Is, you know, it's there's some cherry picking in there, but back-to-back homers, you know, again, the Braves did come back and take the lead in this game, but it felt like you got hit with a ton of bricks, honestly, when that happened, just because it was so early and it was like, oh, here we go. And, you know, I guess to credit Keuchel, he didn't let it get out of control, but that did happen. And it was like, all right, well, it's going to be one of those kind of days, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it was, as you said, it was really about as bad of a start. To his credit, he did settle in. Second inning wasn't too bad. Third inning wasn't terrible. And again, you just kind of felt like he was going to be left in one batter too many. And of course, he did give up another homer to put St. Louis up 3-1. Again, you know, it wasn't the worst start of his life, or, you know, I guess you could do a lot worse, but he was not sharp, and that was pretty evident from the early going.
Yeah, so let's go to the offense for a second. You know, basically nothing doing in the first 2 innings for the Braves offense. There was a 2-out walk by Matt Joyce in the second inning. There was a double play by Freeman in the first inning, and we'll come back to Freeman, I promise. But the third inning was the first decision, I guess you want to say that it was a decision, that was made, and that was Dansby leads off with a single in the third, and Keuchel stays in. He bunts, but strikes out on said bunt. Then Acuna singles Dansby over to third, and that's how the Braves score their first run, is when Ozzie Albies has a sac fly to get it to 2-1, and then Freddie Freeman strikes out for his second consecutive damaging at bat early on. This is not like a huge decision, I don't think, but what did you make of Keuchel hitting for himself? I know people were like, what do you mean? It's the third inning. And I'm thinking, well, have you watched him pitch so far in this game? And B, it's a playoff game. You don't treat I know that if Keuchel is obviously not going to get pinch hit for in the third inning of a regular game, but in the playoff game, when he's on 3 days rest and you have Julio Tehran available, presumably, or Josh Tomlin available, presumably, I would have at least thought about hitting for Keuchel there. I know it felt worse because he didn't actually get the bunt down, but did you think at all that he might have been a pinch hit candidate there, or was it bunt okay for you?
I mean, I thought in the moment that they might pull him, but at the same time, it was the third inning. If you pull your starter in the third inning, you're basically guaranteeing that you're going to have to need a bench player of some kind every two or three innings for at least a pinch hit role. It wasn't like the worst decision of his career, right? To not pull Keuchel. It sucks that he wasn't able to get the bunt down. That hurt. But I guess if he would have pulled Keuchel back, I guess at that point you're probably using Rafael Ortega as your pinch hitter. I'm not sure the trade off there is all that worth it.
Yep.
And because Keuchel had only thrown two innings, maybe Snit was trying to squeeze. It did seem like, again, jumping down innings, but because Max Fried was used as a pinch runner, you kind of got the sense that they were not going to go to Fried no matter what today.
I think Snit said that, by the way. I think Snit, I mean, that was very clear by the pinch run, I think. But I think Snit even said it even clearer after the game that Fried was not available. And listen, you can't ask him to pitch four times in 5 days. He's a starting pitcher. You just can't ask him.
Yeah, and even Melanson, who has been a reliever for 10 years now, is not used to pitching four times in 5 days. So, it was knowing that he had a little bit of a limited bullpen and a couple guys, again, Julio, who wasn't necessarily a known commodity in the bullpen by any means. I guess it wasn't a shock that they didn't pinch hit for Keuchel. Probably could have gone either way.
Yeah, I was fine with that, but that was the first decision that actually happened, if you want to call it that. I would have been okay if he hit for him. I was okay. It actually kind of made it easier that he was able to bunt. Obviously, it didn't go well, the bunt itself. But, you know, weirdly, getting a guy on made it easier to not pinch hit for him, which is funny to say out loud. But that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
So they get a run there. Probably should have, you know, felt like they probably could have done a little bit more damage. That's the story of the night, honestly, in a lot of ways, is they didn't do as much damage as they probably could have. But they got one back, and it suddenly, you know, some optimism there. They stay with Keuchel in the third, as they should, after he wasn't pitch hit for. He gets through the third, and at that point, you know, probably seen enough of Keuchel, but we'll come back to that. Offensively, in the fourth inning, down 2-1, there really wasn't anything happening. You know, Donaldson walks, and Marquez hits into a double play, the second one of the first four innings for the Braves. And then, you know, almost immediately after that, Keuchel gives up a home run, and suddenly back to a two-run deficit. He faced Carpenter after that, which I guess makes some sense because Carpenter's left-handed, and that was going to be it for that after he walked him. That's when it's a situation where you have to take him out, and they did. Clearly, two batters too late, and I think that was that's not really revisionist. I was surprised that he let him face Ozuna, but there you go. The weird thing for me, anyway, was that they double-switched in the fourth inning. That was a strange one, in my opinion, tactically. I know that Adam Duvall's been great in the series, but if you're going to double-switch in the fourth inning, why don't you just start Adam Duvall? Like, that's kind of where I land on this thing. They bring in Luke Jackson, and you presume that Luke's not going to go deep because he's not going to go deep. But I just thought that was a little bit interesting in that you didn't need a double switch. I know Snicker loves double switching, but it just felt weird.
Yeah, I was a little confused. And of course, I think it was Mark Bowman who first tweeted that Marquez was coming out. And I think everybody had a panic attack. Like, what? They actually pulled Marquez? And of course it wasn't. It was Joyce, who has not been great either. Like, let's be clear about that. Joyce has struggled. All the left-handed batters. That's the reason this series is going to five games. It's because the Braves' left-handed hitters have been terrible, honestly. So, yeah, I mean, I was a little surprised. I know Duvall's played well. It ended up kind of paying dividend a little bit later. Who knows what intel they had, or if it was just Snit being Snit and trying to save himself the need to pinch hit for Luke Jackson the next inning. I was a little surprised.
Yeah, I tend toward it not being a huge deal, but because we're doing what we do on this podcast and going the entire way, that was just a bizarre decision, in my opinion. Jackson does navigate the fourth the rest of the way. He walks Tommy Edman, but strikes out DeJong and Hudson on cue, which is good. The fifth inning was the positive one for the Braves.
Finally.
Dansby doubles in fortunate fashion. It hits the bag and goes into left field. That was some Cardinals voodoo. in a negative way, I guess. Well,
must be nice. Yeah, for once.
They've done it about 10 times in the series, but Dansby found the bag, goes into left field. Then you get a pass ball from Yachty, which you just hate to see that.
Very tough.
And then Duvall reaches on an error, which is interesting. That was originally ruled a hit and then changed to an error. He hit it hard. It probably should have been an error, though, and it was. To 3-2, and then Acuna flies out, the only time that he was retired in the entire game, by the way. And then Ozzie bombs. It's the biggest swing. Everybody's jumping for joy, as they should be. And suddenly the Braves, in a hurry, go from down 3-1 up 4-3, and you're feeling good. So let's stop right there. What's your thought process / feeling at the end of the top of the fifth inning, knowing that it's 4-3, but you're going to the bullpen even deeper. You're already on your, at least second or third pitcher at this point in time, depending on what you wanted to do there. Where are you at in terms of your optimism level at 4-3?
I was watching, I was kind of watching on the fly today in a couple different spots. And I told to somebody I was watching during the fifth inning. And I said, four runs is not going to be enough. And it obviously ended up not being enough. So, it was great to finally get to one of their starters. There hadn't been a lot of success. We talked about the issues of Dakota Hudson. Dakota Hudson? Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been a long day. And he's not been great this year. And early on, the Braves really weren't able to get much of anything. So it was nice to finally get something going. In the back of my mind, though, you have this feeling that if knowing how the bullpen has been, and it was only the fifth inning. Speaking of which, I thought today's game took forever. Like, it was the fourth inning, and I felt like it was the eighth inning. I don't know if anybody else felt that way or if you felt that way.
It was glacial. I mean, I was in a weird spot, too, where I'm in a basketball arena covering a basketball game, and I did get to watch, I would say, there were 313 pitches in the Braves game. I think I probably saw 300 of them. I missed it at batter two. But, yeah, I mean, it was not – we've commented multiple times, you and I have, in the last couple of days about how fast a couple of those games were moving. They were almost regular season pace. Today did not feel that way. By the way, just the final tally, the Braves used 7 pitchers and the Cardinals used 8 pitchers. So 15 pitchers.
Yeah. With a lot of middle inning guy comes in, gets one out, you pull him, and then another guy comes in, gives up a hit and a walk, and you pull him. So it was a slow game. But to get back to it, it was good to see Ozzie kind of come to life a little bit. He's been pretty good, especially since the series has shifted to St. Louis. I didn't think his ball was getting out. I guess it'd be a conversation for another day that if baseball really went in and changed the balls after juicing them all season long to different ones in the postseason, because it's pretty clear the ball has not carried like it did during the regular season. But to take that 4-3 lead in the fifth was nice. And you just kind of had to hope that they would keep adding on.
Yeah. I was surprised to get out too. I mean, not deathly surprised, but it was not off the bat, like a no doubter that in my opinion,
I thought they was going to go warning. I mean, all the balls in this series,
I was going to say, we're kind of predisposed.
Braves have all just died at the warning track for whatever reason. So
there have been several of those in this series. Okay, so it's 4-3 at the end of the top of the first. Sorry, top of the fifth. I was surprised, and maybe you weren't, but I was surprised that Luke Jackson stayed in this game at that point in time. Now, just based on matchups more than anything, like, basically, it's top of the order, and I was just surprised that it was Luke Jackson there. It didn't actively hurt them, so this is not revisionist. I just felt like it was surprising at the time, but maybe that was just me. They got to Darren O'Day later in the inning, but I just couldn't believe that he faced Goldschmidt more than anything. Like, it surprised me that he stayed in, but then once you get through Colton Wong, who I guess Jackson has a better chance to get out than O'Day, because he's O'Day is a rookie, clearly, and Jackson has some out pitches against left-handed bats. But leaving him in to face Goldschmidt was a choice.
Yeah, my only guess is that Snit was trying to ride Luke Jackson as long as he could, just knowing he had already gone through, his starter didn't go deep, and it, again, knowing that Fried wasn't available. Was my only guess, but ultimately you can't necessarily manage like that. You have to manage like every at bat's important at this time of the year.
Yeah, and I guess fortunately he got by without damage there. Let's keep going. We have a break to get to soon, but I'm going to stop in a, I'm going to stop at one certain spot, I think. So, sixth inning, you know, sixth and seventh inning, we kind of grouped together because nothing really happened except for, you know, the seventh was maddening on Atlanta's offensive side. So they put a man on base in the sixth with Marquez singling, Max Fried as a pinch runner, which we alluded to earlier, but, you know, Dansby walked to load the bases in the sixth. Adam Duvall strikes out, though. You know, Adam Duvall was due for one. I tweeted that right after the fact. You can't really get mad at Adam Duvall right now.
Based on the way and the he faced some nasty sliders, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's frustrating. For me, anyway, it was not nearly as maddening as the seventh was, or clearly later in the game, which we'll talk about in the ninth inning. But in between six and seven, Sean Newcomb comes in, and I think, honestly, maybe it was just where I was, but that's the thing that I think was discussed the least is like Newcomb just came in, mowed down 1-2-3, and it was like a blip on the radar that no one even noticed. Like he just pitched an inning and was good. Like Tomlin got a lot of attention and should have. Tomlin was great in the seventh inning, getting a 1-2-3. I guess it was probably more surprising in some ways, but Newcomb just kind of just did his job and got out of the way. It was just kind of bizarre.
That was me. No, I mean, again, as weird as this game was, there were moments of normalcy in it, right? I mean, again, Newcomb throws well, Tomlin throws well. You had a couple of clean innings, but this was, of course, just before kind of the chaos broke out.
Yeah. Real quick before we get to the actual chaos in the eighth. The seventh inning, Ronald Acuña leads off with a triple.
A triple.
And does not score.
Does not score.
So any seasoned Braves fan certainly had to know at that moment that it was probably going to come back to haunt them in some
sort of
way.
This would come back to cost them a playoff series.
I mean, we all talked about it at the time. I mean, even when it happened in the seventh inning, there were plenty of tweets sent like, okay, let's just hope that doesn't come back and bite them, knowing full well that that's the kind of thing that comes back and bites teams. But
absolutely.
Leadoff triple. Ozzie grounds out and that doesn't get him in. And then, you know, Freddie Freeman, who we're going to talk about later even more, but a strikeout at a bad time. Again, you know, yeah. And then a pair of walks to load the bases and a flyout. So, you know, it wasn't like there was just one moment, but, you know, Ozzie not getting him in is unfortunate. And then Freddie striking out is doubly unfortunate. Yeah. And yeah, I don't really have analysis there. It's just more of if you get a leadoff triple and don't score a run in a playoff game, in a close playoff game, that's usually a pretty massive red flag.
Yeah, I mean, truly, I tweeted it out. I mean, the Braves, I never want to say a team deserves to lose a game for one, you know, one or two happenings, but they did. I mean, you could just tell. You watch them load the bases in the sixth, waste a leadoff triple in the seventh, and then a couple other opportunities later on. You could just see it coming. You watch the Braves long enough, you know how these things go. The fact that they couldn't hit a single fly ball is a killer. You know, again, Ozzie, I think, kind of gets a pass. He, you know, put the ball in play, and it was just right at the second baseman, so there wasn't anything he could really do. But Freddie striking out there is just – it's a real killer. Yeah, it's just – you could kind of see the train coming down the tracks, and ultimately we know how that train ended up when it ran out of track.
Everybody made the joke, but quickly fast-forwarding to the 10th inning, when the entire top of the 10th was three straight flyouts – and everybody said, well, where was that in the seventh or the ninth?
Never fails.
Yeah, alas. All right, let's take a break. We've reached the point of demarcation, and that's the eighth inning. So before we get to that, hold on 1 second, hear from the sponsors, and we'll come right back and finish off the game and talk about the future and all that stuff. So hold on.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Scott. Time to batten down the hatches a little bit, I suppose, on the podcast. Eighth inning. Top of the eighth. Brisk in a bad way because three straight strikeouts against Helsley for the Cardinals, who just looked disgusting in that brief run. You know, I will cop to not knowing a ton about him in general. But and by the way, his numbers this season were not that great, but man, he looked good in that inning.
Yeah, he. I mean, that was impressive.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those, like, you have no chance innings. So, you know, if you want to give anybody a pass for anything offensively in this game, I will allow some passes for those three strikeouts because he looked great. Tomlin stays in, gets a fourth out. By the way, four outs for Josh Tomlin on 10 pitches.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Shouts to Josh Tomlin, who I don't have a ton of faith in, I'll be honest with you, but man, he was awesome in this game, so that was important. Shane Green comes in, and then all hell breaks loose. And before we even start here, I understand the lean to pile on Shane Green, and there was some of that. I was generally okay with people, with the way he was, you know, handled on Twitter. I think most people understood what happened here, but there was also the side of the fan base that's like, you know, screw you, they should have left Tomlin in. Before we get to what happened with Shane Green, I was totally fine bringing in Shane Green. Like, totally. Even now, yeah, I'd do it again. Like, that's just... Tomlin got you four outs. That's a great job from him. Shane Green is better than Josh Tomlin.
Yeah.
So...
And obviously, people listening to this know what happened. It wasn't like Green gave up a couple of rocket doubles off the center field wall.
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, even taking into account, we know what happened. We'll talk about it in a second, but... You know, no one before the game today was coming out and saying that Josh Tomlin's better than Shane Green, and that's who he wants to pitch. Like, no one's saying that. I understand Tomlin looked good. I totally understand that too. But revisionism is a cruel thing. You know, Green. I guess we'll talk about it now. A broken bat double by Paul Goldschmidt at 69.7 miles per hour, which is incredibly low for a batted ball in the major leagues. That was brutal. He strikes out Ozuna, who had been the killer in this game. And then Yadier Molina, that man, flares a single just over the outstretched arm of Freddie Freeman at first base. And by the way, people were, you know, because Freddie was terrible in this game, people were piling on about how he should, you know, I can't tell you that Freddie should have made that play. So, like, I'm going to relax on that. He jumped too early, but that's not, like, an easy play by any means.
No.
We could pile on Freddie later. We're gonna, but
no, I mean it was
not that one.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate. If he's playing a step back, he probably catches the ball. It was just kind of the perfect. I mean, you couldn't hit that ball again if he tried, right?
I mean, it was crazy. I mean, 63 miles an hour. At that point, I didn't go back and check this, but somebody tweeted it out at the time, and I checked it at the time that the two batted balls that scored the run to tie it were the second and fourth softest, not hardest, softest hit balls of the game on either side at that point. And they combined to score the fourth run for the Cardinals, which is just incredibly on brand by all parties. The Cardinals, voodoo magic.
Yeah, exactly.
The Braves, yep. Non-voodoo magic.
I mean, if there's any justice in this world, the Braves are going to have like 9 bloop doubles down the line in game 5 and win by 8 runs because they deserve. I mean, seriously, how many little bloop hits or broken? I mean, just off the top of my head, I can think of 3 broken bat doubles for the Cardinals in this series.
That's a lot. I mean, we did acknowledge earlier on the podcast the Dansby's double off the bag was lucky. So it wasn't just like wasn't just the Cardinals, but the Cardinals definitely have more of them in this series, yeah, by a pretty substantial margin. So yes, Shane Green blew the lead, if you want to put that in just plain terms, but I have a hard time talking about how bad Shane Green was in this game. He was not bad in this game. No. He just got unlucky, which it happens. It's baseball. That's, you know, weird stuff happens, but you know, there you go. So at the end of the 8th inning, it's 4-4. You're still feeling all right. Games in the balance, but not feeling, you know, as good. But then Ronnie leads off with a double. And it's like, all right.
Here we go.
Ronnie leads off with a double in a tie game. At that moment in time, the Braves are a fairly substantial favorite to win this game. Because the run expectancy for the meat of the order, the heart of the order, with a man on second base and no outs, a fast runner on second base and no outs, is pretty high. You're supposed to get a run there. You just are. Yeah. Not every time, but more often than not, you score a run there.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we know what happened. Ozzie pops out, his second unfortunate plate appearance in this game. And Ozzie, by the way, gets the pass because he homered, and he should, because Ozzie homered in this game. But he was not, you know, we're going to talk about Freeman a lot. Ozzie had 2 really bad at-bats at bad times, too. He just happened to homer as well, so we don't care necessarily as much. But
yeah,
Ozzie had 2 rough moments, too. But Freddie then grounds out. So I guess he did slightly his job because he moved the runner, but that was not a great at-bat.
And no, we're going to, like you said, we've been piling on Freddie. I mean, he did hit his ball. I mean, it was a grounder, don't get me wrong. But it was hit decently well. It was just right at the second baseman, the shift. So
that was his best at bat of the night.
Yeah, truly. I mean, it was. And like you said, if who knows if Ozzie does his job and Acuna standing on third and he hits a sharp grounder at the second baseman, who knows how it plays out differently. But
yeah, that might have got the run home if Ozzie had done his job. But yeah, didn't work out. Donaldson, same thing, and Ronnie staying on second base with another wasted opportunity. It wasn't as jarring as the 7th inning one was because a leadoff triple is better than a leadoff double. You know, simple things there. Yeah. But, man, you got to score there in a tie game. And I think, at least for me, maybe it's my fatalism, but as soon as they didn't score there, I'm thinking, all right, they're losing this game.
That was the third time in 4 innings that they had a prime scoring opportunity and didn't take advantage.
I mean, they loaded the bases in 2 straight innings. In the 6th, it wasn't as freakish, but they loaded the bases still. 7th inning, they absolutely should have scored. That was the one. And then the 8th, they didn't, but the 9th, you know, not they didn't load the bases, but they had a guy on second base and no outs. Like, you got to score a run. Get one run. Do you have any idea how unlikely it is to not score a run in all 3 of those situations?
Yeah.
Like, it's especially with, like, again, guys you want at the plate. Freddie for sure, Ozzie for sure. Like, I don't know. It's just brutal. You know, there was some faint hope though. They did not lose in the bottom of the 9th, which I thought was going to happen because Tommy Edman singles, and I'm thinking, all right, this is over. They got DeJong to fly out, and honestly, it should have been double play. It didn't end up burning them. Markakis, let's stop right now. What did you make of the throw? I personally, and I tweeted this out.
Yeah.
I don't think it was all him. I think I couldn't figure out why Freddie was on the wrong side of the bag. Like, that was bad from Freddie. But there was some division on the throw. I thought in the moment everyone was going to agree it wasn't a very good throw. But then there were some typical zealous defenders of the throw. So what did you make? Did you think it was – I mean, it obviously wasn't a terrible throw. But what did you make of the throw?
No. I mean, it wasn't a great throw. It wasn't a terrible throw.
That's right.
I mean, I don't know if Freddie had his feet tangled up.
What was he doing?
But it's, you know, I mean, it's he kind of let the ball play him instead of playing the ball. And that's, you know, it's
he was on the wrong side of the bag. I mean, it was just, that was it. And fortunately, I guess, for all parties, they didn't score there. So that wasn't the reason they lost by any means. There was it was a zero run takeaway. But it's just kind of weird. Like, Marquez doesn't have a great arm. We kind of all know that. Again, it wasn't a disastrous throw. I was more confused by what Freddie was doing, and I think that was just another notch in the belt of how bad Freddie was in this game. Yeah. A smaller one, but still one that happened. But I wanted to at least ask you. Mm-hmm. Green did get out of it, escapes after. Oh, by the way, Fowler rips what we thought was going to be a double down the line.
I thought it was over. I was so close to turning off the TV.
And mercifully went foul. But yeah, that was the end of that. So as we said briefly in the 10th, you know, they flew out three straight times, which was maddening after what had happened previously. No bad swings, just flyouts. I mean, nothing relatively harmless. A couple of balls that were hit reasonably hard just kind of didn't go where they needed to go, and there you go. The final decision, second to last decision that they made in this game, was going to Tehran in the 10th. Now, in the moment, I candidly thought that Melanson was probably not available. We referenced this earlier, I think you did. Melanson pitched 3 out of 4 days and threw a lot of pitches in his first outing, and I thought Melanson was kind of unavailable. But Snicker, after the game, said that their whole plan was to go to Julio until they were winning, and then they were going to hand it to Melanson.
Yeah.
So that confuses me, because if Melanson is available, maybe this is just philosophical. If Melanson's available, he needs to pitch in the 10th against the heart of the order. That would be my opinion. And in the moment, I just was assuming, maybe wrongly so, obviously, at this point, that he wasn't available. But if he's available there, you want to extend the game. Like, I get that Julio, you can throw him forever. But if you know in the 10th, you have what we have to consider to be a better option in Melanson in a one-inning sample, wouldn't you want him to pitch against the heart of the order for the Cardinals? Because that's what I would be doing if he was available.
No, I mean, I'm with you. Now, I kind of see it in the moment.
It's not egregious, I don't think.
No, and I think you have to realistically see it as, okay, if you use Melanson in the 10th inning and the game is still going and you don't score in the 11th, then you bring on Julio, but then it all of a sudden you truly have run out of pitchers at that point.
I mean,
right?
It's Julio, and then basically – you might have an inning out of Fulte, because they said earlier in the day before the game started that Fulte, it was his throw day, so maybe you can get an inning out of him. But that would have literally been it. Like, you don't have any.
Truly, I mean you were out of options at that point. You burned Fried as a pinch runner, which is fine.
I guess Julio could have thrown. I mean, realistically, if they were treating, I assume they would have had Julio as much stretched out as he could have. Could he have thrown 6 innings?
Probably. I mean, they would have had to. I don't know what else.
I mean eventually you have to pitch position players, but I mean, I have to assume Julio hadn't pitched in a long time, which is worth pointing out. But I mean, Snicker said that he was going to pitch until they were winning. So I don't know. For me, I would rather run out of pitchers and have Julio be the only guy I have left than risk what happened in this game and have Mark Melanson, who Snicker, you know, clearly believes is his best reliever, not pitch. That doesn't make sense. I mean, and for me, my guard would have been up on Melanson in this game on, you know, day 4 out of 5 pitching. But if he's available, man, like I have to trust that he's better than Julio Tehran. So I think the worst scenario in that spot is losing the game without Melanson pitching, and that's what happened. So yeah. I get what Snicker is saying, and again, it's not terrible, it's not indefensible by any means. That's how I would play it, and I know it probably sounds revisionist, but if you told me, I promise you, if you told me in the moment at the end of between the 9th and the 10th, if you said, by the way, Melanson's available, I would say, okay, put him in. Like, you just put him in, especially. Yeah. If Julio faced the bottom of the order, I would have understood it a little bit more. But we knew what was coming up. It was the only guys who have done any damage in the series.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird.
No, I mean, truly, it was as soon as it happened. I mean, again, I don't want to hate on Julio too much.
It's
he's
not his fault.
Enough of it.
I mean, it is to some degree, but it's.
I mean, it is, but it's, you know, he was thrown into the heat of a game, had not pitched the entire series, hadn't made a competitive pitch in almost 2 weeks at this point, like. It was not as if they brought in a proven veteran reliever who hasn't pitched in 3 days and should be ready to rock. Like, again, I don't want to make excuses, because ultimately it was his, you know, he was the one who gave up the double and ultimately the game winning sac fly. But it was not optimal conditions all the way around, and I think everyone kind of knew as soon as he came in, especially once Wong hit the double down the line, everyone kind of knew what was going to happen.
Yeah, so he's a professional athlete, so there is some blame for Julio, but you know, I definitely do not want to put the loss on Julio. Like, the offense is the reason they lost this game. They blew the three opportunities. We talked about it ad nauseum. Julio would be, you know, seventh or eighth on the pecking order of reasons they lost this game.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, we've been critical of him at times. I'm a little bit, you know, I don't love the way that the whole thing played out. We've been talking about it throughout the series, but for me, if you're going to have Julio on the roster, if you choose to have him on the roster, I don't see how you get to the 10th inning of game four before he throws a pitch. That's just, it's very weird to me. I guess the argument against that would be at least you have someone who can throw five innings for you in an extra innings game. But if that's your whole plan to use Julio, like, I mean, that's not great.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I could see all sides that we could probably just leave it there for now. But the last decision that we should at least bring up, they get the dribbler from Ozuna and the forced play at second. You have first and third, one out, and they pitch to Molina. So I didn't have a huge problem with this in the moment, I have to say, but people, I think, rightly were pointing out that, you know, if you walk Molina, it's not really about Molina, it's about creating the out at any base. And because none of the other runs matter, it's just the guy at third, you might have the argument to open up the forced play at home as a better outcome. And, you know, behind Molina, they had Carpenter, which is the reason why I would not have argued to walk Molina, is that you're now facing Tehran against Carpenter. I don't love that matchup. So what did you make of that? I was okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, I always worry about, you know, intentionally loading the bases because if all of a sudden you throw four balls or hit a batter with a pitch, the game's over, right? Yeah. So I'm kind of in the same boat. Now, if it was like, and because it's Matt Carpenter, who's a veteran and who is left-handed, obviously, you know, if it was like the pitcher who was coming up and it was, I don't know who was available at that point.
Well, if it was Paul DeJong or if it was, you know, Harrison someone who has been colder or Bader, a right-handed batter that it was not scalding hot, I would have probably argued for it. And Carpenter's been pretty bad this season, but he's still a lefty with a platoon split and someone that you probably can get to hit a fly ball. So, you know, Molina, it stings a little bit more that it was Molina because everyone, you know, just the way that all plays out and he's just treated with this reverence by everyone that just drives me insane. But, you know, not to defend Snicker, but I think that was fine. People were upset about it. I'm like, look, man, Molina, this is not Molina from 10 years ago. Like, he's not a great hitter. He's just not. So it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There were many things that the Braves will look back on. And this isn't to say the series is over, right? I mean,
it's not.
Game five, you're going home, you have Folty, you're facing Flaherty, who was really good outside of one pitch in game two, but this series isn't over. If they end up losing the series, though, I think this is the game that is really going to hurt because even game one, which they lost, it kind of felt like it could go either way. Both teams left a million runners on base. Granted that, you know, you lose Chris Martin injury, which was a freak thing, but this was truly the one game with all of the opportunities. In one of those three or four innings, if you put one in the gap, the game's over. And instead of, you know, having this podcast tonight, we're talking about something entirely different.
Yeah. To wrap up this game, before we are going to look ahead, and as you said, the series is not over. There's still one more game to be played. We'll talk about that in a second. Wrapping up this game, though, I'm going to read you some stats, Scott. In game four, the veteran duo of Freddie Freeman and Brian McCann was 0-10
Ooh.
At the plate.
Yeah.
Now, Brian McCann is not Freddie Freeman. Brian McCann is a role player at this point. He used to be a star. Brian McCann was a fantastic all-star level player for a long time. Now he's a role player, and I think he deserves some heat, to be sure, for as bad as he was in this game. But Brian McCann is a role player, and a role player going 0-5 in a game is just not that big of a deal. Freddie Freeman is a star and the face of your franchise, essentially. So that one hurts more. It's one game, so I want to say that out loud, that they went 0-10 with no walks. just to say that they were really bad in this game, and they were sort of duking it out for number one spot, I guess alongside maybe Keuchel, in terms of just like the most impactful negative in this game. More stats, though, and I'm going to let you react. For the series now, this is four games. These are your veteran players, essentially. The only guy who I'm not listing here is Matt Joyce. He's just played a lot less. Same with Adam Duvall. Like, Joyce and Duvall have just played half the innings, basically, based on their role. So that they don't have as many plate appearances. But here are your four veterans in the series. Freddie Freeman is 2-for-16. Nick Markakis is 3-for-17. Brian McCann is 2-for-13. And Josh Donaldson is 2-for-15. Now, all of them have at least one walk, so it's a little bit better than that if you want to squint. But, you know, if you told me those four things were going to happen in the series, I'd probably tell you that they're already done after four games.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it's not like those are homers either. I mean, these are...
Freddie hit a homer, and that was it. Like, Freddie's yep. was the... I don't want to say meaningless, because it wasn't. They almost came back in that game, but that was a desperation trailing bottom of the ninth home run.
Yep.
And every other thing that's happened on all these guys. I think Donaldson has a double, but
Donaldson's double was the tying run yesterday.
And Markakis has a quote unquote double, but it was the chopper double that was the luckiest thing imaginable.
Yes. Yeah. And McCann doubled, I think, in his first at bat of the series, actually, and into the gap.
But
the fact that we're having to go back and credit these guys for hits from three days ago speaks volumes. I mean, Freddie hasn't shown up. He's really been bad. Donaldson hasn't really received quite as much criticism as others, and maybe that's because he has a couple of RBI hits, but
he does. And he has two walks. He's the only guy who has two walks. So, you know, he's reached base four times in 17 plate appearances, which is still bad, but it isn't as bad. And he also has a few defensive plays.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that he'd be getting more heat if not for Freddie, but Freddie being so bad has taken that away from him. And I think justifiably so, because Freddie's been worse.
Yeah. And as you said, I McCann, he's batting a little bit lower in the order. It's not what you want. And really, as long as Mac is kind of controlling the game and working well with the pitchers, which he's done a nice job of.
Yep.
And then Markakis, I mean, we could beat that dead horse a little bit more. I tweeted earlier, he has looked every single day of 36 years old in this series. I mean, he has been truly
he should be absolutely thrilled that Freddie's been so bad. Because not that he would get criticism, because he doesn't get criticism. That's just what happens, unless you're talking about people like us. I do find it striking, and I tweeted this, and I'm just going to present it, and then I'll leave it here. I was really interested to see how Freddie was going to be covered tonight. He got a little bit more heat than I thought he was going to. But can we just say if Ronald Acuna was 2-for-16 in this series, it would be the end of humanity.
Oh, they'd be calling to trade him. I mean, truly, it's – and again, I don't want to start, bashing the local media members, but it's been bad. I mean, it really has.
It's not only them, though. I mean, but even nationally, I don't think that, he would just get – Freddie's not getting a pass fully, but I think it's fair to point out that he gets more of a leash than some guys would, including Ronald. And by the way, Ronald, I have a couple more stats. I don't even think I put these on the document, so you don't even know these so far. I have some Ronald Acuna stats for you, Scott.
Okay. All right.
Ronald Acuna, in this game today, was four for five. He did not score a run. 4-for-5, did not score a run. And that included two extra base hits, including the ones we talked about a lot. That's hard to do. 4-for-5, not scoring a run when you have two extra base hits is tough.
Yeah.
The Braves had 8 hits in this game. Acuna had 4 of them. That's half. The Braves had 4 extra base hits. Acuna had 2 of them.
Hmm.
I have it in front of me. In the series, Ronald Acuna has a 1579 OPS.
God, he's such a stud.
He's slugging 1,000 in the NLDS.
That's unreal.
Those are just a few.
And he had a single that was about a foot away from being a homer.
Well, yeah, not to belabor that point, but yes.
What happened?
Yeah, something happened there. But no, listen, it's I know that they lost this game and it's not time for it, but he's been incredible in this series. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, all right? And isn't our little doc. Would you change up the lineup for game 5? Would you move Dansby up, who's been maybe the second best hitter? Would you Do you start Duvall? Do you, I mean, you, we all know that Freddie isn't getting moved, but would you manage your
Brett? I mean, the only thing that I would, and I would have done this already, I would, if you, okay, I don't know. I think I would not start McCann. That would be the number one thing I wouldn't, that I wouldn't do is start McCann. Which might seem off the beaten path, but I'm actually kind of stunned that he started all four games.
Me too. No,
that's that's the only
Flowers,
surprise for me, really.
Yeah, other than one inning, Flowers has like been non-existent, which I'm surprised by.
I mean, they clearly soured on Flowers a bit this year. You know, his bat wasn't great, and then he had the pass ball stuff. So I totally get that to some degree, but you also have Cervelli, who's like a good player. Like, he doesn't have to be Flowers. I think it probably would be Flowers, but McCann's... I would have lost money betting against McCann starting all five games if he starts all five games.
Yeah, me too. I'm truly surprised by that.
I mean, I know it's the Cardinals, and I understand the Cardinals have right-hand starting pitchers every night, so maybe that's part of it or most of it. But, yeah, just a lot. You know, lineup-wise, I don't love lineup as it is anyway. I personally would have split Markakis and Joyce at some point anyway in terms of – you know, put Dansby up there or do whatever. Like, I would not have gone three straight lefties in that spot the whole series. So, if nothing else, I would go Dansby sixth or seventh in the lineup. I think him hitting eighth right now doesn't feel right to me with the way that he's looked in the series.
No, he's the only guy hitting the ball other than Acuna.
Yeah, I mean, Albies had the home run today. I pointed this out, I think, just quickly and quietly before the series started, but it is worth at least thinking about, you know, Ozzie Albies against a team facing a bunch of right-handed pitching is not good enough to be a number two hole hitter. Like, Ozzie Albies has a sharp platoon split. He's a pretty average hitter. Actually, he might even be a little bit slightly below average against right-handed pitching. So if you're trying to be nitpicky, that doesn't great necessarily, but he's been fine in the series. I mean, he's not been outstanding, but he's made a few plays. Like, his OPS for the series is like 750, which is not anything to write home about, but it's not a disaster either. Compared to everybody else, it looks pretty good, other than Acuna. Lineup-wise, I mean, we know Freddie's... By the way, I wouldn't move Freddie. I know Freddie's been terrible. That might be controversial. People were talking about him hitting like seventh. It's like, stop. It's not going to happen.
No way. Yeah, that's not happening.
I mean, we know it's not going to happen, period, but I also wouldn't do it. Like, if it was me, Freddie's not going to hit below where he is now. Like, I've long been on the train of Freddie hitting second, which, so if they did that, then I'd be fine, but he'll never do that either. So... I think the only thing that I would definitely change is Dansby hitting higher in the lineup. And then below that, I would probably not start McCann. He's just been so bad. It looks bad, too. It's not just like, he's not getting bad whipped. He looks bad to me. So, I don't know. What about you? I mean, we have to say, by the way, I should have said this before. We are very pro Matt Joyce. He's been bad in the series, too. Like, he's been bad. So... he does not absolved. He just doesn't have as many plate appearances as some of the other guys do, but he's been bad. So
no, I mean, truly, it's been...
if they want to start Duvall, I'll be okay with it. I mean, Duvall goes against the... like, you know, I'm a big proponent of those guys having real sharp splits, particularly Joyce, but you will not hear an argument from me if you want to start Duvall over Joyce or Markakis. And it's not going to be Markakis. I'm trying to be realistic and just know for 100% certainty that he's going to start Markakis on Wednesday. We all know he's going to, so...
yeah.
Let's try to be a little bit realistic and say, I mean, would you start Duvall? I'd be okay with that.
I wouldn't be stunned if Duvall starts over Joyce. I mean, especially as quick as they pulled him today. I wouldn't be surprised. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to get Dansby up a little higher. I mean, even moving him up a spot, break up the lefties a little bit, get him in front of McCann.
I think I hit him sixth. I mean, if they stayed with the exact same guys, which, again, I don't necessarily love, but if they did that, I'd hit Dansby sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. That seems reasonable to me.
So, you know, we'll see. The disadvantage between now and Wednesday is that we don't have as much information. You know, normally when, you know, the last couple of games, we've known a lot of what's going to happen the next day, but now there's a full day off and they have to travel. We do know that it's going to be faulty. There was a one-word answer, by the way. Snicker was asked who the pitcher was for on game five. And he just said faulty. That was the full answer. So it's faulty. No surprise there. Obviously, that was a given once they pitched Keuchel today. You want to look ahead? Or you have any final thoughts on what's happened so far?
No. It was a frustrating loss, to be sure.
maddening. All right, so setting the stage in a way that only I can, the Braves now have the following stats going against them. They have now lost 6 straight games in the playoffs with a chance to eliminate an opponent. 6 straight games, 0-6. They are also 0-5 in their last 5 elimination games, where they are facing elimination. So they have to break those streaks in order to win. And of course, they have not won a playoff series in 18 years, which is the biggest one we've been talking about the whole series. So all that to say, all the bad stuff, I still believe right now today, 12:40 a.m., Tuesday morning, Eastern time, that the Braves are better than the Cardinals. I believe that. I believe the Braves are better. Do I think Folty is better than Flaherty? No. But I think Folty, with what we saw the other night, is capable of pitching as well or better than Flaherty is in a one game sample. So if I told you, Scott, that the Braves are better than the Cardinals, maybe you don't agree with that, but for my scenario, the Braves are better. They have a starting pitcher that is capable of pitching lights out baseball. We just saw that a few days ago, and they're at home. Why can't they win?
I don't want to. I thought the Braves were going to win the series in 5 from the very beginning, and I don't want to act like I was.
You're a genius,
Nostradamus. Right? Yeah, sure. We'll see how it is in 48 hours. But I did feel like these two teams were pretty close and evenly matched, and really, it's been that way. I mean, you look at this series, Game 1. Braves probably should have won. Bullpen collapses late. Cardinals win.
Yep.
Game 2 is the only game in the series where one team led wire to wire, I believe. And
that is correct.
Even then, it was 1-0 until the 7th inning for Adam Duvall. And the Cardinals got the tying run to the plate in the 9th. It wasn't like it was this 10-0 blowout where, yep, you know, they were pulling guys for, you know, to give Josh Donaldson a couple innings of rest.
Game three was fortunate, honestly.
Game 3, you know, that Adam Wainwright and Soroka match basically are perfect for 7 innings. And if it's not for the Braves' big comeback in the 9th, which was really impressive, if this was a Cardinals podcast, we'd probably be talking about how game 3 got away from them, right? And then today, I would argue the Braves were the better team. They should have been able to score some of those runs, and they didn't. So. It's every game has been close. It's really felt pretty evenly matched. I do agree. I think top to bottom, 1-25, the Braves have the better roster. But you know, as these things go, you're just one broken bat double down the line away from either advancing or going home.
Yeah. And just to set the stage a little bit, you know, right now it's very early. It's Tuesday morning or Monday night, whatever it is. And basically, all the betting markets have the Braves and Cardinals as a literal coin flip. Essentially, on Wednesday, which is sounds about right, frankly, mm-hmm. because again, what I've said before, like I think Vegas believes the Braves are a little bit better than the Cardinals, but I also think, and actually this one I know the market's going to think that Flaherty against Folty is an advantage for the Cardinals, so that kind of balances out, and that's how you get to a coin flip scenario. So. And by the way, home teams are not as good as people think that they are in this spot in baseball. I saw a stat today. They're basically 500 for like the last like long. It's like a 100 plus game sample, and the home team's like 500.
Yeah.
So that's a little thing, but it's also, you might think that's just like this big hammer advantage. You know, if you're a Braves fan, I was there in 2003. We talked about this earlier today. It's kind of funny. I tweeted out, you know, October 5th, 2003 was a rough day because it was game 5 NLCS against Kerry Wood and the Cardinal and the Cubs. And I went to the Falcons game the same day and they lost both. And it was not a good day, but I just think about game 5s at home and they haven't gone super well. So it's been a long time.
We're due is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, maybe optimistically we're due. That's a good point, Scott. And
always Mr. Positive.
If you want to be optimistic, if you win, fortunately, you know, the Dodgers and Nationals are having to expend some energy to win their series. Whoever wins that series will be on level footing. Like, it's not like you're waiting for a team. It's not like you're playing a team that's been waiting for you that has their pitching set up and all this stuff. So if you win the series, you know, you're in a probably better spot than we would have hoped next round. So,
yeah.
optimistically, I think you're still okay. I mean, today was brutal. No one would dare argue otherwise, I don't think. But, you know, Freddie, man, this feels homery, and I'm not a homer, but I really think Freddie's going to do something on Wednesday. I might be crazy. I might be putting a lot of faith in Freddie Freeman, but, you know, he flatly downplayed any notion that he's hurt, by the way. That was the thing. You know, people, he was asking, it was a natural topic of conversation, and Freddie, I think to his credit, did not say that he was hurt. Maybe he is, but he said zero when asked how much it affected him. He said zero. So that's something that he probably should do, even if it's hurting him at this point in time. You don't want to have the excuse. It just feels to me, it feels impossible to me that Freddie Freeman's going to go like 2 for 21 in the series.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to bash Freddie, who's been just a star for this team for so many years, but it really does feel like it. If they end up losing this series without knowing what's going to happen in game five, other than Freddie having, you know, just a crazy game and a losing effort, it does kind of feel like people are going to look back and go, what could have been if Freddie was his normal self? And that's not fair, sure, because other guys haven't been great. We talked about Donaldson, and the bullpen's been pretty shaky. But at the same time, you know, if Freddie is even close to what he's done for so many years and isn't bad, I think we're having a different conversation.
And that's the price of being the guy, too. I mean, that goes without saying to some degree, but, like, when you're the guy, you get more heat. And there's this notion now, by the way, that Freddie's, like, this terrible playoff player, and that's not true. Like,
no.
He hasn't been incredible in the playoffs. That's worth pointing out. He had a really good wild card game in his first playoff appearance in the game that they lost to the Cardinals in 2012. Since then, he's been remarkably average. Like his career OPS in the playoffs is like 800 or maybe even less than that now after today. That's not great, but it's not disastrous either in the way that he has been the last few games. So yeah, you're hoping that Freddie gives you something. And if not, he will be in the top three or four in terms of most negative value in the series. I mean, Melanson blowing the saving game one was still, as of like mid game today, was still by far the number one negative win probability added guy because of just that one implosion that he had. And I think Keuchel will be kind of up there based on his two starts. He wasn't great in either time, but he didn't kill you in game one. Like, he was competitive.
Yeah.
It's Freddie being the GOAT would be so weird.
Yeah.
But it might happen.
It's too bad. If he is hurt, I mean, obviously, once whether the playoffs are over for the Braves on Wednesday or in another 2 weeks once the NLCS wraps up, or in another 3 weeks when the World Series wraps up, who knows? I mean, it's just obvious that at some point it's going to come out what kind of injury he had. I'm guessing he will have some kind of surgical procedure done this winter, even if it's just a cleanup or something like that. Because he's obviously had this bone spur for a while, and I don't want to get too far down the well or act like I'm Freddie Freeman's doctor here, but at the same time, he's clearly been wrong for about a month or maybe even 6 weeks now, and this seems more serious than just my elbow kind of bugs me sometimes when I, you know, do a weird swing or have to put weight on it.
It is, I will say, and as someone who I've pointed out multiple times that I did not understand Freddie playing the three games and at the end of the season, it is worth noting that Freddie might be healthy. Not healthy, but he might. It might just be that he's been bad.
Hell of a time for the worst slump of his career.
It might not be. I mean, I'm with you that I think the full month, like, I think it's probably affecting him to some degree. But it's at least possible in this kind of sample that he is just not playing well. Like, and that's what he said. If you want to take him at his word, and I have some trouble with it to some degree on this one because he's just, I don't think he's in a position to say that he's hurt or whatever. But he might just be bad right now. And
no,
we'll see.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible.
It's not always black and white on this one, but I tend to agree with you. All right, before we get out of here, Scott, are you staying with your prediction? Braves in five?
Oh, yeah. Yep, Braves in five. I'm going to say Braves win. Oh, I'll say 4-2, Braves win.
I was doing pretty well with my predictions. I started doing predictions on Twitter before games the last three, and today did not go as well. As the other two, I picked wins in all three games. I'm going to pick another win. I mean, I'm on record. I can't, you know, as much as my defeatist attitude creeps in sometimes, I think the Braves are better. I just do. So I can't not pick them in this game at home. I think they're the better team. Score-wise, they're going to need a score in this game, I think. You can't, in my opinion, expect Fulte to do what he did the other day. It's just not realistic. Is he capable of doing that again? Absolutely he is. He was lights out. He was incredible. But if you told me right now Fulte gave you 5 2/3 and 2 earned runs, I would take it.
Yeah. No, I mean, that seems reasonable, especially as, I mean, yeah, you're right. He's not going to throw 7 scoreless on 8
might,
pitches again.
I just you can't bank on that. It's
that would like cement him all time. You know, I mean, that would be, you talk about players you look back on in 20 years. If he repeats what he did in game 2, I think you kind of get him in that conversation. But it should be fun. I hope for the, I mean, obviously I hope the Braves win. It's been a really super fun team all year long, and it sucks because, you know, only one team gets to hold the trophy at the end of the year. I think it will be, the season as a whole, be viewed as disappointment if they end up losing in the first round again. But again, it's baseball, as we've seen. It literally just takes a broken bat double and a bloop single over the first baseman's head to change a series.
Man, I just realized I was so close to nailing today's final score. I had Braves 5-3. And if they just score any of those runs, any of those runs, they win 5-3 sometimes.
There you go.
So yeah. I'm feeling it right now. My prediction is strong, Scott. I am going to say 7-7. You heard me. 7-3.
Braves. All right. I would happily take a 4-run. Like, when was the last time the Braves won a playoff game by 4 runs?
God, I don't even know. I was probably 6 years old. I'm kidding about that, but man.
But no, I mean, but you're not. It's been forever.
Oh, man. Well, 7's probably too high with Fleury down the mound. But hey, I'm sticking with it. None of this matters. It's baseball. Yeah. I do believe they're going to win, though. I really do. So hold that against me later on. Podcast plan, by the way, as we record here. If the Braves lose, I don't know what I'll be able to give you that night. We might take a day off and record Thursday. We'll see. Because I also have to do Hawk stuff too. And we might just not be in the mental place to record a podcast if they lose.
No, I probably won't be in the best mood.
We will do a podcast within 24, 48 hours, win or lose, would be what I would say. If they win, we have to turn around pretty fast because then they play Friday. And either in LA or home against the Nationals. That'd be wild.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the next thing. We will have at least one more podcast about the playoffs, and hopefully many more podcasts about the playoffs. But at least one more, either Wednesday night or Thursday night. And yeah, thank you for joining me, Scott. As always, we managed to do an hour podcast. You said, and I'm quoting, 20 minutes was what you expected on the podcast.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed earlier on.
We all were, I think. So. Yeah.
But now, you go get some sleep. You had a long day, and
it's only 1 a.m. Eastern. I have to be at work at 7, so yeah, we're good.
There you go. Atlanta traffic. You can leave at 4:30. Be there on time. It's a good old day.
Good shots from the non-Atlanta resident.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening. As always, please subscribe to the podcast because even if they lose, we will be back with off-season podcasts and all that fun stuff. That's sort of what I'm dreading to talk about right now. But this podcast does not cease regardless. So please hit the subscribe button. Tell a friend about the show. We will see you again, win or lose, but hopefully win later on this week. So thanks and stay tuned for that.